From beach towels to tea towels, and from mugs to water bottles, the TNT shop has it all. Browse our shop now at tntradio.live. Trish Wood on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hello, people. Trish Wood here, and we are on the fringe together. I love, love, love that Holland story. It's just great. They won 15 seats, and it's the Farmers' Party. So being in Canada this morning, I'm hoping that the truckers who were in charge of the truckers' convoy and the people supporting them are now thinking about a truckers' party, because we really need something like that here. We absolutely do. That's the best news I've heard in a long time. You know, it is, as Patrick Henningsen just said, it's democracy in action. So yay, because I was going to open my show saying the exact opposite based on two other things that have happened. And that is that it looks kind of like, you know, you always say the West, its democracy is failing. And I will say this morning, I feel, except for Holland, that maybe it's already fallen. And let me tell you what I mean about that. In Canada here, there is a really big scandal involving Chinese interference in our last election on behalf of the reigning Liberal Party of Prime Minister Trudeau, who has appointed a fellow named David Johnson, who is the former Governor General, which is a big deal, to act as the person who is going to get to the bottom of whether this was corruption or not. I mean, of course it was corruption. But Canada is now so corrupt that even the process of investigating corruption involves corruption, right? So the governor, I'm not picking on David Johnson. Apparently he is a man of, you know, wonderful, wonderful character from all accounts. Although that's coming from the elites in the news media, so who knows? But let's just say that's true. He was our governor general, but he was also a founding member of the Trudeau Foundation, the prime minister's father's kind of legacy foundation. When the prime minister made the announcement about Mr. Johnson getting the role, it was almost like he was trolling us, because he was talking about how good a friend Mr. Johnson was with the Trudeau family, that he's known him since he was a kid and he used to go to his cottage in the Gatineau or wherever it was. I mean, seriously? Is this the guy who's going to look into the prime minister's corruption? If an old family friend who was a founder of his dad's foundation? I mean, wow. It cannot get more corrupt than that. And what I don't understand, and what Kinsella is writing about today in the Toronto Sun, and he's right to do it in my view, he's written a letter to Mr. Johnson saying, you know, if you don't recuse yourself from this, you're going to ruin the reputation that you've spent your life's work building up. So, and I think that's absolutely right. It's just foolhardy that this has even happened. So that's Canada. And, you know, as long as this government is in power, we're going to be in trouble. What it means is that the people cannot have confidence that what's going on in their name in Ottawa, in the House of Commons, is actually being done on their behalf. I don't believe it is. And I think that the movement growing by the truckers and the farmers in Holland is really a pushback against the globalists. There's no question about that. And so we can't, you know, we can't have these acts of outrageous, outrageous corruption happening. I will say, this is an interesting part. This is so bad. It is so bad that the news media, who are normally very kid glovesy with our prime minister, are pretty mad. There's a guy named Andrew Coyne, who I couldn't even stand reading his stuff during the trucker strike. He hated them. So he called the truckers hillbillies, right? That's so awful he was. But he's really going after him. So when the legacy media in Canada is going after Trudeau, you know something is definitely smelly down in Ottawa. But maybe even bigger than that was the news overnight from President Trump and others that he's going to be arrested on Tuesday. Ooh, like arrested. by a New York attorney. Now, what's interesting about that is that it's apparently a charge to do with the Stormy Daniels payoff, which was kind of hush money, right? But you know what? All payoffs that are legally adjudicated in that way, they include an NDA. That's normal. Signing a non-disclosure agreement is part of a legal settlement. So this has now been criminalized by Alvin Bragg, who's the DA in New York. It's another one of the 88 gazillion ways the Democratic Party and their corrupt apparatus in places of power, I know that's a strong statement, but I now believe it's true, are trying to make sure that President Trump, Donald Trump, doesn't run in the next election. I guess they are afraid of him. But I wanted, just before we get to our first guest, who is, his name is Orrin McIntyre. He's from The Blaze, and we're really happy to have him. And he's going to have a lot of interesting things to say about this Trump story, I'm sure. I want to just check in with some of the people who were writing about it on Twitter, because they're saying astonishing things. Clay Travis, the same people who told you Donald Trump was a direct threat to American democracy are about to indict their chief political rival of their party and try to put him in jail. This has never happened before in American history. The Democrats under Joe Biden and their media allies are everything they told you Trump was. The actual authoritarian dictators hell-bent on complete political power. This is literally happening the same week that we received direct evidence of multiple members of the Biden family receiving millions of dollars in payments from China, our chief political adversary, just because of their last name. Wow. So this is astonishing. Julie Kelly, who has been writing a lot of investigative pieces about January 6th and the infiltration of the protest slash riot there by operatives for the state, says, and I think this is quite prescient and people should listen, can't wait to see Patriot FBI front dudes cause problems next week. Heads up, if you're in an internet group chat anywhere discussing a response to Trump's arrest and unknown posters with handles like Up with 1776 or I'm a Domestic Terrorist are in it, leave immediately. Trust me, that has happened. DC Drano, banks collapsing, record inflation, border invasion, Ukraine losing. What do you do to distract the country? Let's indict Trump. Someone's asking, will Governor DeSantis assist the state of New York in arresting President Trump, a Florida resident? And here is Donald Trump. I just want to read a little bit about what he said. Of course, it's florid, but why wouldn't it be? National illegal leaks from a corrupt and highly political Manhattan District Attorney's office, which has allowed new records to be set in violent crime and whose leader is funded by George Soros. This is very Trumpian. Indicate that with no crime being able to be proven and based on an old and fully debunked by numerous other prosecutors fairy tale, the far and away leading Republican candidate and former president of the United States of America will be arrested on Tuesday of next week. Protests take our nation back. Ooh, I'm scared. Then he goes on to say this is a third world and dying. I understand that. I understand why he is saying that. So I think it was Vivek Ramaswamy, somebody else today on social media said that the arrest of Trump would almost guarantee a victory if it's possible to run for office if you've been arrested. I don't know if you can be, but this is a remarkable story, and you should be following it through the week because I think terrible things might happen. So our guest today, as I said, is from The Blaze, Orrin McIntyre. And I want to start by talking to him about his reaction to the news this morning that they are allegedly planning to arrest the former president on Tuesday next week. Hi, Orrin. How are you?
Hi, Trish. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. So what was your response when you heard the news?
It's pretty surprising. It's hard to tell because we know that Donald Trump, for all of his many good qualities, is very prone to hyperbole. But if it's true, it's absolutely shocking, right? It's something that's very dangerous. It's a very dangerous step for the left to take in the United States. I mean, obviously, if something like this happens, you have a pretty big political crisis on their hands. I can't believe the left would be this foolish to kind of put themselves in this position, but they've also lost a lot of their self-discipline. They are very scared of Trump and willing to do almost anything to keep him from running again. And so they might not have the self-control to keep themselves from doing this.
I think you're right about that. It feels like some ugly kind of craziness has been unleashed within the party and the people who serve it. You know, they're not doing anything lately that actually serves their own interest. They may think it is, but I think it's not serving their interest to behave this way.
Yeah, I think that for the most part, they've drunk their own Kool-Aid. Maybe previous generations of the Democrats would have been able to kind of understand the precarious situation they're putting themselves in and would have had the restraint. But I really do think that they've degenerated to the point where they just do not have control over kind of their understanding of how the political machine works. And that means they're exposing themselves in a lot of ways.
You know, just going back kind of to the beginning at 2016, really 2015, when Trump started running and people believed, oh, yes, this is really happening, but they didn't think he could win. And then he won, and he won handily, and all hell broke loose with the Russia hoax, et cetera. You know, it's been a long season here of them trying to stop him in any way possible. And the ways possible all seem to fail. I know that, you know, he didn't win the last election, but everything else they're doing seems not to work. They're kind of like, who is the cartoon who keeps dropping the ant, the Roadrunner, right? He keeps dropping the ant. I mean, they don't seem to be able to keep him down. And yet while they're turning themselves upside down to do so, they're kind of destroying themselves.
Yeah, this has always been Trump's greatest strength, is his ability to enrage the media. Many people have mixed opinions about how Trump himself governed, but the one thing that he should always receive credit for is that he's just a heat-seeking missile for the narcissism of our ruling class. They don't have the ability to control themselves around them. He just sends them into, you know, complete fits. And that's why I think he's so powerful in that position. A lot of people feel guys like DeSantis would be better in governing with policy and procedure, that kind of thing. And they're probably right. But the one thing that Trump is extremely valuable for is just his ability to destroy the carefully manicured image that the media wants to present of our ruling class.
Yeah. Well, this is, I just want to read what Vivek Ramaswamy said. As you know, he's going to be running in the primary. A Trump indictment would be a national disaster. It is un-American for the ruling party to use police power to arrest its political rivals. If a Republican had used a campaign finance technicality to arrest then-candidate John Kerry while Bush and Cheney were running, were in power, liberals would have cried foul, and rightly so. Principles go beyond partisanship. Let the American people decide who governs. This will mark a dark moment in American history and will undermine public trust in our electoral system itself. He's calling on the Manhattan District Attorney to reconsider. So that's interesting. There was talk of even going in there with handcuffs for, you know, like a perp walk.
Yeah, that would be obviously a terrible visual. That would just be handing the Republicans an amazing gift for the Democrats in many ways. But again, it's hard to know because the left is more than willing to punish their political opponents legally. Yeah. We've seen that very often. They've gone after multiple Trump, Trump officials, former Trump administration members. It's very clear that they're more than willing to punish people, and they've really paid no cost for it. So you have to ask, what is going to motivate them to restrain themselves in this situation? Now, again, wiser heads, cooler heads in previous iterations of the left would have known that this is a serious acceleration and brings them to the point of very brittle and obvious totalitarian power. But again, they've made it very clear, and I don't think the hypocrisy or the violation of procedure or the idea of fair play or something is going to really be anything to stop them at this point.
Well, what about DeSantis? Does he have a role in stopping this at the border somehow? Does he have to, as governor, approve whatever paperwork allows them to come in and arrest him, or do local police arrest on the behalf? How does it work?
Well, it depends on how the jurisdiction works in this case. It generally, they're probably not going to, hand Trump off. I would imagine they would require, usually you would have an extradition agreement between the states, and they would move him from Florida to New York, where the hearing would occur, where the charges originate. So in a traditional scenario, yes, there would be apprehension by Florida law enforcement and then moving them there. So if that was their plan, then there could be a role for the governor there. But that would be, again, a very dangerous scenario to put everyone in. When you get to the point where you're asking, will a governor enforce the political dictate of Washington to directly punish their direct political opponent? What you're asking is a question that starts civil wars. I mean, to just be frank, there's no way around it. I mean, when you have that kind of request handed off to a governor, what you're really asking is, will you be willing to start a civil war here? And that's just insane territory to put anyone in. It would be, again, incredibly foolish of the left to do this, but I don't know that they have the ability to restrain themselves.
Well, I want to explore that a little bit more. I want to take the temperature of the Trump voter, the MAGA movement in America when we come back. So we're just going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with Aaron McIntyre from The Blaze talking about this story about Trump's possible arrest on Tuesday.
TNT Radio's Chris Smith.
The latest policy stance delivered by Florida Governor Ron DeSantis this week on Ukraine. Now, this will upset the mainstream. He does not want the United States to keep funding Ukraine's defense against Russia's invasion. Now, given the fact that he's got a good chance of becoming the next president, this is quite significant. He will withdraw aid to Ukraine. Now, before you all kick up a stink, I agree with DeSantis, because it's Europe, not the United States, which should be pitching in the most, and they are not. What is wrong with many of these European giants? It is in their backyard. It's not in the backyard of the United States. It's certainly not in the backyard of Australia. They always leave it to the United States to mop up their mess. Well, if they couldn't contain Vladimir Putin, and I think that's fair enough when it comes to France, they should do and carry the greatest weight in their support for Ukraine. Interesting comments from Ron DeSantis.
Chris Smith on TNT Radio.
Let's take advantage of the freedoms that we have while we have them to advance the kingdom's objective, to be salt and light.
Freedom is hard. Election security involves you, involves the voters.
This election for people of faith is vital that we see a change, because the war against Christians is at an all-time high.
Transparency is the key not only to having honest elections, but to maintaining public trust in those elections.
Our ability to vote is not being withheld from us. No one's trying to stop you from voting.
The one place the American people can have a say is at the ballot box. That's why the Democrats and the far left are working so hard to get rid of all election integrity.
We cannot let our elections be anything but transparent. It is at the very heart of freedom in a free society.
And if we lose America, I mean, it's all over, because the world has looked to America for hope.
Free and fair at salemnow.com.
What's your name?
I'll let you in on a little secret.
Oh, come on, guys.
You must tell us.
This is Today's News Talk and the voice of freedom. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Yeah, back with Orrin McIntyre, and we're talking about this news, not completely confirmed, but coming from Trump and repeated by other credible people, that he may be arrested on Tuesday. There was even talk of a perp walk, which is mind-blowing. That would be the stupidest thing the Democrats have ever done, but they've done a ton of stupid things, so why wouldn't they do this? And I wanted to talk more with Orrin about the idea that this could start a kind of civil war, in the sense that Trump voters, people in the so-called MAGA movement, have been ripped off, feel like they've been ripped off since 2016. They elect the guy they want, and it's a disaster from day one, with false allegations of Russia interference and the Russia hoax and impeachments. And he just, their guy never got a chance to govern. And now that he wants to make a comeback, they're doing this. I'm sure that's what they're thinking, because if I was one of them, that's what I would be thinking. And they must be. And then, you know, with the January 6th tapes that Tucker released, I mean, they must be, you know, fixing for trouble, or some of them are, I'm sure.
Yeah, to be really clear, I don't think that Trump or anyone else is calling for a, you know, civil war or anything in this scenario. But what I was trying to, you know, kind of explain was, if you end up in a scenario where you're asking a governor to stop the legal, to basically not extradite a political opponent to what he believes is a political persecution, if he says no, and then you're in a very dangerous scenario. Then you really are in a constitutional crisis, because then you have to you'd figure out who has sovereignty in this scenario. Do they have the ability to compel the governor of Florida to produce a political enemy for prosecution in another state? And that's just a very contentious place to be.
Yeah, no, I understand. And I'm glad you made that clarification. I didn't mean to misspeak on your behalf. I guess what I was getting at is just the idea of that visual of, if it happened that they were stupid enough to put him in handcuffs and walk him in front of a camera, how that would ignite, the feelings that would ignite in many places in America.
Yeah, you really are in the straining of kind of the political formula, the justification for rule in the United States. Obviously, popular sovereignty is supposed to be the justification for our government. And if you're in a scenario where it's become functionally illegal to be a politician that opposes our ruling class, if Donald Trump himself and anyone who worked in his administration is basically subject to legal penalty, more or less for the opposition of the ruling class, that's a very dangerous place to be in. And it will wake a lot of people up to the fact that they do not have the legitimating mechanism in their country that they thought they had.
And I think that the flip side of it too, and we're going to have Christian Perronti on in the next hour to talk a little bit about this. He wasn't meant to, but I will ask him about it, because I know he's talked about it and thought about it, is the idea that these, were there to be some kind of pushback in a movement of some sort, it's almost guaranteed that it would be infiltrated by people from the so-called deep state, maybe even to rabble rouse, as has been said about numerous, like the Gretchen Whitmer kidnapping and January 6th, other places. So that's the other side of this too, that, you know, Julie Kelly is saying to people who read her Twitter feed, don't, you know, go to these meetings because they might be rigged. You know, that's awful to contemplate that as well, that you can't even protest anymore without being set up.
Yeah, well, it's exactly how soft power works, because it's the best thing you can do to make sure that no one can protest, no one can use their First Amendment right to assemble and to air their grievances to their elected representatives, is to make sure that any meeting of those people might be set up for exactly what you're talking about. There's someone there from, you know, the state security apparatus who is going to try to rabble rouse, is going to try to drive people, create a media moment that then allows for the FBI or other agencies to clamp down on this. And we see this on a regular basis. The FBI has already done things like said, we're spying on watch out for Catholics who go to Latin Mass because they might all be radicals. And so there's already a very clear interest from our state security apparatus in trying to infiltrate and clamp down on and understand where these people who might disagree with them are, in hopes that at some point they can subvert those meetings. And so I think everyone is very right to be worried, but that is itself very worrisome, because that means that no one can just exercise their basic constitutional rights because they're worried that at any moment the government will try to infiltrate that group and manufacture a scenario where they can then justify additional persecution on the basis of political beliefs.
Yeah, these are dark days. You know, we have a bit of that up here. We had, you know, with the truckers, they closed their bank accounts and froze their bank accounts. And then a list of people who donated money to truckers, all those lovely people, all legitimate too. They were, you know, the CBC up here was saying, oh, it's, you know, it's American Proud Boys sending the money, which turned out to be absolute garbage. But that document of who had given money to the trucker convoy in Ottawa was, it was doxed and put out there for people. And everybody was absolutely terrified. I had people calling me and saying, oh my God, I'm going to lose my house because I supported the truckers with $10. So that stuff really works, doesn't it?
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. People, that chilling effect is incredibly powerful. And it's hilarious, of course, to watch people like Justin Trudeau then talk about human rights violations of protesters in other areas. Yeah. But this is what happens. Our global order that has been assembled through our ruling elite has decided that they get to lecture every other country about human rights while locking down their own, because of course the only thing that matters is kind of the expansion of their own power. And so it's more than fine. There's a total justification for locking down protesters inside their own borders and restricting their rights while complaining about the human rights violations of countries that they see that are not under their global hegemony.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. I feel that dynamic is especially powerful in Canada because this country was very, very COVIDian. We had some of the longest lockdowns, longest school closures, draconian punishments. I'm not vaccinated, and I only got the right to fly a few months ago. Like I couldn't, not only could I not fly, I couldn't take a train, I couldn't take a bus. Like I was trapped in the city in which I live, unless I wanted to walk somewhere. And I feel that dividing up of people, especially here, has reduced a certain class of us to being less than human. I don't think our prime minister is bothered by punishing people who don't vote liberal and are not culturally like he is, which is extreme, extreme left, right? I think they just think that people who aren't like them aren't worthy anyway, and they don't care. That seems to be the message they're sending anyway.
Yeah, I think that one thing that both the United States and Canada and many other Western nations share is that the left in particular understands that politics is about rewarding your friends and punishing your enemies. And as the divide in your country grows, as the shared culture is severed, the social fabric is torn in half, it only becomes more extreme, the need to punish your enemies. And I don't think they flinch for a moment to do that, which many people are shocked by, but they shouldn't be, because it's only going to continue.
How will we ever in your country or mine have an elected leader that actually pulls people together? I know that's it, that they all say it, and Biden said it, you know, I'm going to bring the country together. He had no, and then he said, you know, unvaccinated people should be thrown in jail or whatever. It's like ridiculous. They say it, but they never do it, and they don't mean it. But I can't imagine who either one of us could elect that would actually do that and mean it and be able to pull it off.
It's really going to have to be someone who's willing to ask for the power to change things in a significant way. I think that at this point, you've got a scenario where the moral visions of the two sides in many different countries are just completely incompatible. And the only way to really solve that problem is to find someone who can forge something new that is able to allow these systems to coexist or to peacefully separate from each other. And that's huge. That's something a task that I think is extreme for any politician to undertake. And so it takes someone of real vision and who's willing to think well outside the box. And hopefully that can occur, but it would take a lot.
That's so smart, Oren, that you think that maybe there will be a time when we have to peacefully separate, because I feel that. And I talked to my best friend, who is very like-minded, about this very thing, that there are some people we can't be friends with anymore. And it's not that I'm saying I don't want to be friends. I'll be friends with anybody, but it's that the situation is so uncomfortable because there's so many off-limit topics. In other words, I can't be neutral about children having their breasts removed and their penises cut off because of a movement that feels like a cult and that has no medical or scientific basis for it proceeding. I can't just say, oh, well, you believe that. I mean, how can you not feel deeply about seeing it that way around someone who thinks it's fine? I don't understand. So I think it's really true what you're saying, that we may be looking at a time when people divide up into, in my view, the people who are wide awake and seeing everything for what it is, and those who are foggy brained and buying all the BS from the cultish cultural left.
Yeah, the ability of Western liberal democracy to mediate cultural differences really came from the cultural differences being relatively minor when it came to values. There's enough shared social fabric that the things that needed to be mediated were not this severe. But as you point out, when we get to the point where people are disagreeing over whether or not you can carve functioning body parts off of a teenager, whether that should be legally allowed, then you're to an extreme that is just unable to be, you can't coexist. You can't have both of these be more realities simultaneously. And so I think it really does come down to the fact that at some point you need to understand, okay, these cultures have become so divergent that they can really no longer cohabitate. Now, again, hopefully there's a situation where, you know, that can be solved through a peaceful separation. But I do think a big part of especially the progressive mindset is the need to rule and punish the other side. The other side is bad. The other side is sinful. The other side is dangerous and cannot be left to its own devices. And you need to use your moral superiority to control them. I think that much of the progressive coalition is bound together by its desire to rule the opposition. And so that's a very central part of what binds them together. And so they're not really ready to let go of those who disagree with them, because punishing them is central to their belief system.
And that's kind of the tragedy of what happened to Trump, isn't it? I feel like there was a moment, regardless of what you think of him, he's obviously super flawed in a gajillion ways, but there was a moment where much of the stuff he was saying made pretty good sense, and especially his foreign policy and his stated, anyway, conviction to uplifting working people. I don't know if that was true, but he stated it and I bought into it for a minute and a half. But now that like people like that who are not buying into this massive kind of infrastructure built by the elites, I wonder if they can ever win. And if they do win, if they can ever govern, actually. Like if DeSantis won, do you think he could act? Would they let him govern, or would they do to him what they did to Trump?
I think they would seek to do to him what they did to Trump. And so I think the key to understand is that any transformation of what's going to go on will be a multi-generational process. I think you're right that there are still serious areas of agreement between, you know, things like immigration restriction, things like rehabilitating the working and middle classes, bringing jobs back, things like protecting the jobs that are here. I think those are wildly popular things across many different areas. But for the ruling elite to allow those things to develop, that's not going to happen overnight, because many of those projects are key to their power.
Yeah. Well, the truckers were very, very scary to them here. I mean, it was a full-on assault of lies, which interestingly were all exposed, or most of them were exposed at the inquiry, the commission inquiry looking into it. But of course, the commission of inquiry being part of the apparatus of the Liberal government, did one of those kind of 9/11 commission things where they're saying, well, on the one hand this, on the other hand that, kumbaya, let's all get together and be good citizens, and would not call out Trudeau for invoking the Emergencies Act, which he didn't need. I mean, there was no violence. There was no threat of violence. It was ridiculous. But that's how the system kind of spits out real, I think the truckers in a sense were real threat, because they were instantly popular. They were raising tons of money without batting an eye. And they cut across, I would say, all political spectrum. They were primarily, I would say, right of center, but they had many, many followers from every part of the spectrum. And I think that was extremely dangerous for our prime minister and the people in power in Ottawa right now.
Yeah, we see these groups that are really effective, like the truckers and like the farmers you were talking about. And one of the key things is that our global supply chain system, the way that we do our logistics, is so stretched out, and the ruling class are so dependent on it while putting almost no effort or understanding into it, that these are incredible points of vulnerability. And that's what grants these working class people who have some level of autonomy and some about ability to apply pressure to the elites in just a really powerful position, because through very peaceful means, through very optically positive means, they can provide a very crippling blow to the illusion that the people in power actually are what's keeping everything afloat. And that's one of the most dangerous things to the regime that we have right now. They're shattering the illusion that the soft informational technological power that they wield is actually what keeps our system alive.
I just want to ask you a personal question about what it's like to be American and holding, you know, views on the conservative side and living this way. I mean, this feels like a new thing in your country. I'm not saying America's always been perfect, but this feels new, and it feels like it's getting worse and not better.
Well, I'm in a very lucky position, and I do live in a very red part of the country. I am surrounded by people who tend to be more Trump voters, tend to be in a similar way of thinking. And so in my kind of personal and everyday interactions, it's not really a huge deal. It's actually there's still a very large amount of the country that agrees, of course, with kind of what we're talking about. There's lots of popular support. Of course, it is a little worrisome when you're in a lot of large bureaucracies, which is why I'm very lucky to have been able to work for a place like The Blaze, which allows me to make a living espousing the viewpoints that I do. But there is a very real sense in which the average person, even though they might hold views like the ones we're talking about, has to be pretty much silent when it comes to work or social interactions where they don't know whether or not this will get them in big trouble, which is why I think you see a growing movement in America, especially on the right, in trying to find things like alternative forms of employment that free people from these large woke corporations that would inhibit their ability to hold these views.
And these large woke cities, mm-hmm. right? I was going to talk about this in the open, but maybe I'll do it here, that I'm working on a film right now, and we were going to be doing some shooting in San Francisco next week. And this is a true story. We're in the process of hiring a film crew, you know, a top crew and a DOP who knows what he's doing. And we'd interviewed a few people about it, and they all needed armed security in order to shoot where we wanted to shoot. They said that gangs are killing camera people, that gangs are smashing and grabbing their equipment. And ironically, this morning, there was a Twitter feed of a CNN reporter working there who had hired armed security working in downtown San Francisco, and within 4 seconds of them parking the car, the back window was smashed and gear was taken, and they got away with it. I mean, what the hell is going on in San Francisco? I mean, it was unbelievable.
Yeah, there's a lot of talk over whether the American system is going to basically go through Brazilification, whether or not you will need a hired security in higher end places so they can continue living a very nice lifestyle while kind of everything around them atrophies and decays. Yeah. I think a big part of that is going to be the state system too, though. One of the beautiful things about the American system that has saved us a lot is federalism. And I do think you will see states like Florida be able to protect themselves in ways that states like California won't. And now, you know, a lot of people are fleeing to Florida. So the question is, you know, does that state transform as the people who ruined other states are allowed to flee to states that are protecting them and kind of bring their political priors alongside. But at least for the moment, there are plenty of parts of America that are still very nice and live great lives because they, you know, understand the basics of law and order and what it takes to make a civilization happen. But unfortunately, that's a state by state basis. It's not just a nationwide thing, which it should be.
Yeah. I got to take a break. I'll be back in a minute with Orrin McIntyre. I just want to follow up on what we talked about earlier, which is if the arrest of Trump would actually take people into the streets and if that there could be violence there. So let's just follow up on that when I get back. Back in a moment.
With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen testified before the Senate Finance Committee today, and she admitted that the Fed's rate hikes played a role in the collapse of Silicon Valley Bank. She also admitted that Silicon Valley Bank received special treatment and that community banks might not be so lucky. Indeed, she all but said the quiet parts out loud. Hey, Heartland, and all you red state MAGA mutts, we hate you. In case you hadn't figured it out, we will contaminate your air and water. We will shutter your banks and businesses. We will kill off all your livestock. We will poison your fields. And we will smoke you out one way or another. We want you dead. Oh, and she also admitted that Social Security benefits will be 24% lower in 9 years when the federal government's retirement Ponzi scheme finally goes bankrupt. Not to worry, I've known since the 1980s that I and my generation were going to get stiffed on Social Security. From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
Everybody's terrified of cancer, the big C. They don't want to talk about embarrassing things, so blood in their bowel motions, going more frequently, a persistent cough, losing weight. I remember a wee man who didn't come to my surgery for ages, and all he would do was apologise and say, "Oh, sorry, doctor, I know if I had come, I know you'd have got me sorted." We are not too busy. We are very, very keen to see our patients as soon as we possibly can. So please don't get scared. Get checked.
The conversation continues.
Our public education system, which I am now renaming our public miseducation system.
On today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hi, Orrin. I'm back. And I want to talk to you about how this might play out if it does happen, if he is perp walked on Tuesday, former President Trump. What do you think will happen?
I think people need to be really careful. I would just take this opportunity to caution everyone, because I do think you're in the scenario, we are in the scenario that you talked about, where the political apparatus is scared and they want to generate particular types of enemies. There just aren't enough violent people in the United States. There aren't enough hateful people in the United States, but they need them. The entire ruling ideology is based on hunting these people down and producing them to scare people as boogeymen. And so as we see with the act of January 6th, they take something and they will take and they will lie about it. They'll say all these police officers died. They'll manufacture everything they need to use it as a way to crack down on people. So I think people need to be very careful. Remember, protests are victory laps for people in power. And you can tell because the BLM riots and the Antifa riots went by with almost no punishment. But January 6th, which was comparatively far less violent than these other scenarios that raged on for months across the United States, all the people involved there are under very serious penalties. So people need to be aware of that. The protest is, in this scenario, a way for them to bait you in to allow them to then bring the hammer of the judicial system against you and the people you agree with.
That's so well said. I guess then one wonders what can frustrated Americans do if in fact this does happen the way it may happen on Tuesday. I mean, what's left for them? I know that during January 6th, there's actually, this was very interesting, came out last week. There's actually a video of Jacob Chansley, if I'm saying that correctly, on a bullhorn saying to people, "Don't be violent, stay calm. We are not Antifa. We are not Antifa." It was like amazing. He was, you know, as he was extolling the people around him who were getting hyped up to settle down and not be violent, right? And he's sitting in jail. And what that makes me think of is how everybody covered for the BLM riots and the Antifa violence. And so it almost seems as if you're on the left and you're protesting and rioting and burning buildings down for a left cause, you're allowed. And if you're a conservative, you're not allowed to protest. I mean, that's how it feels to me. And I'm sure that they feel that way too. I mean, imagine Jacob Johnson was saying, we're not Antifa, behave yourselves. And he's the one sitting in jail.
Oh yeah, he specifically was reading out Donald Trump's tweet that told everybody to go home and disperse and be peaceful.
Wow.
So he was very directly advocating for peaceful dispersion. And he's facing 4 years in jail. We have Douglas Mackey in the United States, who posted a meme on Twitter, allegedly, and is facing many years in jail because he embarrassed Hillary Clinton. That's apparently illegal now in the United States. And so there are these people who are just facing ridiculous persecution. But like I said, I think that people need to understand that there is no immediate popular political action that's going to solve this problem. Again, this is a multi-generational problem that requires a multi-generational solution. And so people need to focus less on, we just rush out into the streets and make our voices heard, and all of a sudden we go back to the 1990s or the 1950s or whatever position you want to be in. Instead, they need to put themselves in the mindset of how to build a better future, a future in which they can have a better vision for what the country could be. And that requires building things. That takes the energy out of popular protests that can be used to damage you and to damage the people who would politically represent you. Instead, building institutions that can be used by people like Ron DeSantis in different areas of the country, Greg Abbott in Texas, and can be used in order to create regional political power that will better the lives of people and push back against this madness.
Yeah, I wrote a Substack last week that got a pretty interesting response, because I realized, you know, I'm not young, and I had a long journalistic career that began in the, I would say, late 70s, early 80s, I guess. And things were done much differently then than they are now. And I realized the other day, this is what I wrote about, that the oldsters who were the practitioners of journalism in the old way, which was not social justice focused, which was not postmodern and fact-free, right? Which was not the end justifies the means propaganda, because we hate Trump, we're going to lie about him because he's a Nazi. Like, that's not what we did. It was flawed, but it wasn't this. And my fear, given what is coming out through the J schools now, which is all social justice. I looked on some of the websites for the big J schools, and they're all about diversity and inclusion and training students and social. Oh, it's just, and I thought, you know, as long as that's who is being kind of siloed into the newsrooms of the nation, it's going to be a generation or two. We're all going to die, the old people who know better, right? We're not working in the business anymore, although I think we should all be speaking up. And it's going to be generations before they turn the ship around, because all the people are infected. Look at, do you remember, did you see the Stanford University judge and the reaction to him by the law students? I mean, it was shocking. I just couldn't believe what I was seeing. And they're going out into the world to infect everything we do.
Yeah, it's people really need to understand. We saw this when wokeness first started, you know, showing its face and kind of its current iteration. You know, in the colleges, a lot of people said, "Oh, this is going to burn out. This is the young hippie movement of its time, and eventually these people will have to go get jobs and they'll face reality, and this will all go away." And instead, wokeness now just dominates every bit of our institutions. People need to understand that colleges, for the much worse and not the better, have become the theological centers of our ruling religion. And they exist solely not to educate kids, not to, you know, better them or anything. They do make them leaders, but only in the sense that they will be able to spread the ruling ideology. And so there really has to be an understanding that we are in a moment of building. You have to shatter these institutions. They're not salvageable. Instead, you need to build new ones. You need to get rid of the reputation of these, get rid of the credentialing mechanisms that allow them to control everything from employment to social standing. And you need to build alternative institutions that people can rely on that will actually produce people who can do real science and do real, you know, reporting and the kinds of things that you actually need to have a functioning society.
Are you homeschooling your kids?
That's actually a goal here, to be sure. My wife is now got that option, so that's having taught in American public high schools, I think it's a good move, though, to understand for people that's it's necessary but not sufficient. Saying I'm going to homeschool my kids, that's great for your kids, but your kids have to have friends, and they have to get married, and they have to have coworkers, and all those people will have been captured by the system. And so it's not enough to just say my kids will be homeschooled. That's a good step. That's a good first step, but it's not sufficient.
Well, I suppose if enough people pulled their kids out of school, they would have to somehow engage on remaking what they're doing, right? Because what we're seeing, we're talking about generationally, these people coming through this woke agenda, they're learning gender studies and all this crap, and then they end up, you know, with purple hair standing at the front of a classroom. I mean, the other interesting thing about those people, and maybe it's only the ones on TikTok that I see, but they're never particularly bright or moral or thoughtful. They're just repeating the language of the sacred texts and believing it with wild-eyed fervor. I just, it's hard to even kind of take that in on some days.
I think the truth that people really have to acknowledge is that society is always this way. The vast majority of people will not completely self-determine their own identities or ideologies. And that's more than fine. That's actually just how humans work. That's not a cynical view of humanity. That's just true. And so the reality people need to engage in is that there will always be a shared value system. There will always be a ruling ideology. There will always be a state religion in some way. And the only question is, what will it be? Will it be wokeness? If that's what we have now. But if it goes away, if tomorrow, conservatives in America or Canada were able to, completely extricate this from their institutions, it would still just leave a void for some other ideology to go in. And so that's why it's so important for people who oppose this to not just have a negative vision of driving it out, but also to have a positive vision that replaces it. Because if you don't give people a shared positive message of who they are and what their country, their nationhood, their identity means, then something else will take its place.
Yeah. And that's why the truckers were powerful, because they did reunite us in that way. I just want to ask you before we go, you've written this great piece called The Left Will Not Stop Its Attacks on Our Children. And you talk about this comment by Joe Biden during a recent interview on The Daily Show, that Ron DeSantis's moves to kind of clean this up a bit are sinful. And what a phrase that is from someone who's a grandfather. He says he's a practicing Catholic. I mean, sinful to try to stop a movement that's mutilating kids. What is with Joe Biden? Is he just such a vessel of political ambition that he says whatever they tell him? Or is there something wrong with him?
I think that it's difficult to know with Joe Biden if the kind of the senility has just set in, or if he's really adopted all of these beliefs. But apart from him, there are many people who would puppeteer him who hold exactly those beliefs and in the same way. And the truth is that, unfortunately, for many parts of the United States, progressivism has hollowed out their Christianity and just wears it like a skin suit at this point. And I think, again, that's why you can't just pretend that these institutions are morally neutral. If you don't have an active faith or an active identity that is safeguarding the values of your nation and the people who run it and the institutions that perpetuate it, then something will come in and will control them. And right now it's very clear that whatever loose association this progressive Christianity had with the doctrines of the faith, it's now replaced them with the doctrine of universal progressivism.
Yeah, I actually left a church for that reason and became Catholic, which is, that never happens, but, for a feminist to join the Catholic Church, but I don't want to get too much into it, but there was an embracing of things that seemed kind of immoral, like not in the teachings. And that seems to be happening. I mean, even the Pope is saying things that I'm somewhat uncomfortable with these days. They're trying to, well, you mentioned the Latin Mass, right? They're trying to get rid of the Latin Mass. So, very, very difficult times we live in. Do you feel anxious at all about the future?
In the short term, yes. In the long term, no. Because I think that all civilizations go through what we're going through now. I think there's nothing new under the sun, and that these cycles have come and gone through different civilizations. And it's our duty to make a better future for the next generation. We're not going to be the generation that gets the generation of plenty. We don't get to do the baby boom, no. You know, live through the best times. But someone has to go through the hardships, and someone has to manufacture that. You know, you have to plant trees under which you will never sit so that the next generation will enjoy them. And so that's the task that falls to us. And what kind of cowards would we be if we rejected it for, you know, some glimmer of safety or security or plenty?
Aren't you a good person? I really like that. You're not one of those people that hates the boomers. Everybody hates us because they think we did this on purpose. We've ruined your lives, you young people. But that was a lovely thing for you to say. Thank you. Thank you very much, Oren. And keep on going at The Blaze. You're doing great work. So happy to have you on today.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Okay, goodbye.